Shall it come to order? Roll call.
Roll call for Wednesday, January 23rd. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Excused.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Amrick.
Here.
Esquibel. Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Excuse.
Hicks.
Here.
Hines.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
Excuse.
Nutting.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Bonflatern.
Here.
President Ross.
Here.
Hastert, 28 present, 2 excused.
Prayer by Pastor Minder.
Morning. Father, thank you again for another new day. Thank you for the Wyoming wind, which keeps our air clean and the riffraff out. Today, Lord, I want to pray for all the support staff, for the clerks sitting here diligently who do their job to make these sessions run smoothly, and President Ross look good. For the pages who serve, Lord, for the support staff behind the scenes, for all the people in this building who do the nitty-gritty details that make these sessions run, bless them for their service and give them the strength to keep going. Lord, as I've walked around the Capitol halls this week and seen the smiles and the friendliness and the good attitudes of all these people, it reminds me of what makes Wyoming a great place to live. Lord, please be with all these men and women here today as they do their work, whether it's in the spotlight or behind the scenes. Bless them in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading correction. Approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of January the 22nd, 2013, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jim L. Anderson, chairman.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, the report is adopted. The nurse of the day is Ann Raga from Gillette. The doctor of the day is Dr. Renee Hinkle from Cheyenne. Thought for the day comes from Albert Einstein. Life is like riding a bicycle. To keep your balance, you must keep moving. Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Senate File 159, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 159, Threats of Bodily Injury or Death, sponsored by Senator Perkins, an act relating to crimes and offenses.
Senate File 159 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 88, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 88, Women's Rights to Reproductive Safety and Information, sponsored by Senator Nutting, and Act Relating to Public Health and Safety.
Senate File 88 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 154, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 154, Legislative Apportionment County Participation, sponsored by Senator Meyer, and act relating to legislative apportionment.
Senate File 154 is referred Committee number 7, Corporations. Senate File 156, first reading of Senate File.
Senate File 156, Enhanced Recovery Carbon Dioxide Certification, sponsored by Senator Hines, an act relating to geological sequestration.
Senate File 156 is referred to Committee number 9, Minerals. Senate File 157, first reading of Senate File.
Senate File 157, Hydraulic Fracturing Disclosure Requirements, sponsored by Senator Escobel, and act relating to oil and gas.
Senate File 157 is referred to Committee number 9, Minerals. Reports from standing committees.
January the 23rd, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 121, Career and Technical Training Grants, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. January the 22nd, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 137, Protection of Animals, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, Senate File 121, the Career and Technical Training Grants, was just read in, has an appropriation, and pursuant to the rules, I ask it be re-referred to Committee Number 2.
Without objection, Senate File 121 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Bills on second reading. Senate File 28, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 28, Resident Preference Provisions.
We have some amendments. Would the reading clerk read in? Wait a minute. You've given me three. Oh, we already had. One and two were passed. Amendments number one and two were dealt with yesterday. We're now on second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 28. The reading clerk will read the amendment.
Senate File 28, second reading amendment number 3, page 2, line 3.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 28. And I don't have a copy with me, but I remember what the amendment's about. Thank you. I do have it now. Mr. President, we were talking the other day about this particular bill, which is contractor's preference. And I alluded to the fact that there's still a pretty big hole out there relative to out-of-state contractors having the opportunity to actually be resident contractors in more than one state. And, Mr. President, what I've decided to do, because there are a lot of those contractors that are in the state of Wyoming, and they do have a presence, and they do really do a lot of good things for our state, and rather than try to take that completely away, Mr. President, I've come back with an amendment that I think goes kind of a compromise that goes a long way to trying to protect what I think is the right of Wyoming resident contractors, yet be reasonable and prudent for those that have been here and make a commitment to our state. Mr. President, what this amendment does, if you look under Section J, under our definition section of 166101, it takes and deletes in 15 and moves it to 20. And, Mr. President, what this is, are the conditions for a corporation in any state that has been incorporated for 2 years but have been within the state of Wyoming for 1 year and are up to speed on their unemployment and their workers' comp forms and have 15 full-time Wyoming residents that are year-round on their staff. And what I've done, Mr. President, is taken this to 20. And the reason I came up with 20, Mr. President, is I looked at my businesses and what I consider to be a core staff, if you're, in fact, in the contracting business and doing that kind of work. And 20 is a good number that we try to keep around. And it seems to me that if they're going to make a commitment to come to Wyoming as a resident contractor, even though they are going to be residents in other states, they should have at least 20 full-time employees within their business in the state of Wyoming. So that's the purpose of the amendment, Mr. President. I'd be glad to answer your questions. I think it's a good compromise, and I would ask for the support of the senators.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd ask the body to resist this amendment. We did a lot of discussion on how we ever came up with 15. And you have to remember, this affects some fairly small companies that struggle to through the seasons to even keep 15 full-time employees. So, you know, and that counts your roofers, your landscapers. They've made the commitment. They employ a lot of people when they employ people. It is those people that pay the sales tax that we all enjoy, and the company themselves pay the sales tax when they're going full bore at it. But it's tough to keep 15 through some of our seasons. Winter for most of them, even a few that struggle in the summer if they happen to be ski-related or something that's seasonal. I would reject this and leave it at 15, which you could argue maybe that's too high, too. But they've made the commitment. They spend the money. They have the office. 15 is plenty.
Further discussion? Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, I also rise in opposition to the amendment. The numbers are that 70, I think somewhere around 93% of the mom and pop companies around the state of Wyoming and the construction area have, you know, the 15 or less. This is going to take, you know, I think an unfair advantage or competitive advantage away from them. And I also ask that you resist this amendment.
Further discussion? Senator, Mr. Vice President, for your second time.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President, for my second time. Just to be very clear what this amendment does, if you are a small company in Wyoming and you are a resident contractor, this 15 to 20 does not affect you. Okay? If you comply with our resident contractor status as a true Wyoming resident and you're operating in business in Wyoming, this does not affect you. What this is are the larger corporations and companies in the state that have a corporation that may have been formed in any state. But if they've been in business for 2 years and have been operating that business in Wyoming for 1 year, that they have to have the 15 employees. This is not about your mom and pop roofer or any of those kind of things. This is for the larger corporations that come in our state, try to be residents in other states, and we're taking it from 15 to 20, the number of full-time employees they will have in Wyoming so they can have the resident contractor status. It's not about the small companies, so I would still ask for your consideration.
Question's been called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 28, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment number 3 has been defeated. Division has been called. All those in favor, please say aye. Or stand. Stand. Stand and say aye.
Aye.
Eighteen. Chair was wrong. Amendment is passed. There's another amendment. Amendment number 4 to Senate File 28. The reading clerk will read the amendment.
Senate File 28, standing. Second reading, amendment number 4, page 1, line 7.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, bring your attention to amendment number 4 to Senate File 28. If you go to page 1, line 7, the first part in a minute, that's a technical correction that we'll bring back. That should have been stricken in this amendment.
Mr. President, point of order.
Senator Scott.
Has the amendment been read in and moved?
The amendment's been read in, but I don't believe Senator Hicks moved it.
Mr. President, I'd like to move second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 28. Members, if you'll go to your amendment where it says page 1, line 7, that's a technical correction that we'll bring back in a third meeting or third reading amendment that shouldn't have been brought in this. So we'll fix that when we come back. If you go to page 1, line 8, within the amendment, it strickens the $5 million dollar cap. That's just a conforming amendment with what's already in the rest of the bill. When we brought back in section 105, it still had that old language in that, so that's just a conforming amendment. Basically, all this amendment does is bring back in section 105, which was repealed in the bill, that includes those agricultural products for eligibility under preference for Wyoming materials. With that, Mr. President, I'd ask for favorable consideration on amendment number 4 to Senate File 28.
Discussion? Question's been called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 28, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment has been adopted. Further discussion on the bill? Hearing none. Senate File 28, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection is so ordered. Senate File 48, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 48, Medical Assistance Hospice Care.
We have some amendments. Reading clerk will read in second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 48.
Senate File 48, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 2.
Mr. Geordi, floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 48. Folks, what this does is requires the department, as part of its next biennial budget, to submit a new unit for the hospice services so that they could be monitored apart from just a lump aggregation into the nursing home budget. This will just simply allow the Appropriations Committee and the legislature in future years to watch the fiscal impact of this bill.
Discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, you know, and I appreciate the thought behind this amendment. I do understand that the department was consulted and said that whether or not it was in a separate unit, they could, if we wanted, track it and tell us what the expenses really are. And so I wonder about the real need for this amendment. When you start saying it's going to be a separate unit within the budget, you then maybe need to be a little more precise. It's one thing to make an estimate for a footnote, but with this sort of thing, you aren't really sure how many individuals are going to show up and need these services, and that's a bit unpredictable. So my question is, if we do this, will it be a separate line item in the budget as it comes to us here on the floor? And also, what kind of flexibility will the department have to transfer money back and forth between this and the line item that covers the Medicaid program as a whole? So if the estimate's a bit wrong, they can switch money. And I think there are some rules where they can. I don't know precisely what they are, and that's my question.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Pardon? Yeah, you can go ahead.
Excuse me. Senator Perkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've worked with the Majority Floor Leader on this, and also been in contact with the financial officer from the Department of Health. What their intent is on this, Mr. Chairman, is that they will pay this out of unit numbers called 463, and that's the skilled nursing home facility reimbursement unit. And so what we're trying to do in talking with the sponsor of the amendment, what we're trying to do is just to break that out inside that unit number so we can keep track of. And the premise of the bill, Mr. President, is simply that this will probably not be revenue neutral, or most likely, we believe it will probably save money. But by separating it out and keeping it within the same unit number, but tracking that number, will help us analyze that to see if that's indeed the case. And so I've talked with the financial officer over there. They can do it any number of ways. It's an accounting function for them. And so I think that it's probably appropriate that we keep track of this based upon the representations that we've made in putting the bill forward. So I see it as a compatible amendment.
Mr. Majority, floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. And when we're talking about the description, it's an expenditure unit. None of these create revenues. It's an expenditure classification. It's also an expenditure that is being lumped into, if we don't take proper steps, it'll be lumped into expenditures that have demand, that draw down a 50% match. So what the amendment says, of course, the bill says this becomes effective July 1 of this year. The budgets aren't due till October, so between July and October, they'll have had enough time, presumably, to begin to look at what the utilization of is going to be and then make a recommendation for drawing out some of the skilled nursing general funds into this account. Then you'll see exactly what the allocations are for the skilled nursing. And with respect to the growth of the account, obviously, somebody needs to be monitoring it, because if it grows, you can imagine a growth that it would have an adverse consequence on the total budget, but at least this way we will be able to see it separately. You'll have non-matching funds in one category, matching FMAP funds in another category. Now, with respect to the concern of what happens if there's a greater demand and it makes sense to go back into skilled nursing and pull money down, there is the 10% flex that exists within programs. And even if that, there's the opportunity to go to the governor for a B-11 to move funds to manage these dollars. My greater concern is that 2 to 3, 4 years from now, many of us won't be here. And this is, you need to have a mechanism so that as people look back in time, they'll understand what happened and at least be able to manage this. If you bury it, if you will, into another account, there's no way to really have a, for future folks to have an understanding is what brought us to the point of creating this program under the proposition that it should be revenue, but expenditure neutral. And I should say general fund expenditure neutral, is the notion is you'll lose your FMAP capacity, but your general funds will be reduced.
You ready for the question? All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 48, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. There's another amendment, the second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 48. The reading clerk will read the amendment.
Senate File 48, second reading amendment number 2, page 2, line 8.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 48 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, what we're doing in this amendment was in talking, I don't know that it's needed, but it'll make it crystal clear in the statute. What we've got in the statute and where we are in the statute is the concept is that to be in that portion of the statute, you should be Medicaid eligible. But what, after speaking with the financial officer from the department yesterday, we talked about three scenarios that might occur, and this amendment, Mr. President, will make it crystal clear that only individuals who are otherwise qualified for Medicaid, you have to be Medicaid eligible to take advantage or for this program, for this 50% payment to a hospice. It was never the intent that we would expand Medicaid for individuals who are not eligible for Medicaid. So what this amendment does, Mr. President, makes it crystal clear that when we use the word eligible individual, as we've got it in the bill, that it means a person who is eligible for hospice care as defined in the state Medicaid plan in effect on July 1st of 2012. Since our state Medicaid plan is not in statute but is by regulation, this will make it crystal clear and make sure that they're the same requirements that the Medicaid qualification requirements you have to go into a nursing home would also apply for hospice. There's an income limitation, there's a resource limitation, and probably most importantly, there's a medical necessity. You have to meet all three of those tests in order to qualify for nursing home care, and you would have to meet all three of those tests now to qualify for this type of hospice assistance. I urge your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment? Are you ready for the question?
Mr. President, one question before we leave the bill. Just for the answer, the question I'd like to have is simply, is hospice eligibility or the ineligibility for the FMAP, is that a consequence of the federal law or that our plan isn't been modified to allow for that? So that is there an opportunity to have a plan waiver amendment as we go through the process to change that?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, are you on the amendment?
Well, I thought we called the vote on it.
No, I haven't yet.
Oh, I apologize. Again. Never mind.
We'll allow you to have your to raise a question after the amendment.
My colleague here was. I was advised.
Question that. Is, shall second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 48 pass the Senate? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. Now, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you wish to re-ask your question, or Senator Scott, did you understand the question?
Mr. President, as I understand the question, can you do a waiver and get the feds to pay for the room and board? And my understanding is that whereas the feds and Medicaid will pay for the medical services and hospice care, and that's already eligible. You can see it in the handout that we passed out yesterday on Medicaid eligibility. You can see it in Senate File 97. That they're already paying for the medical services, Mr. President, but they will not pay for the room and board. And to my knowledge, we have not been able to figure out any way to get them to do it, and I don't think anybody else has either. This has been their policy right through in a number of these things, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the bill? Senate File 48, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 56, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 56, access to records, vulnerable adult abuse.
Senate File 56, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 60, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 60, Medicaid reform.
I have an amendment. The reading clerk read in amendment number 1 to Senate File 60.
Senate File 60, second reading, amendment number 1, page 6, line 3.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. I would move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 60. If you look at Senate File 60 on page 6, page 6, lines 1 through 3, where it talks about the conflict-free case management system, what this amendment would do is on line 3, after interest, we would delete the remainder of the line. And the reason for this amendment is there was some concern raised that the language in the bill is going to unintentionally restrict the flexibility for direct service providers. And this was not the intent of the legislation. The intent was to maintain the flexibility and choice that's currently in place, but the caveat that we were addressing is you can't do both. If you're providing direct services, you cannot be a case manager for that same client. You don't get to be your own supervisor. You can still be a direct service provider. You can still be a case manager. So this language, we're hoping, We'll clean that up and make that very clear. So we're hoping that you'll support this amendment. We feel that it clarifies the position and the intent of the legislation, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion? Senator Barnard.
Mr. President, the good senator from Ventura County and the sweet senator from Sweetwater County brought this to my attention. I've looked it over, and I think it's a very reasonable compromise, and I would ask for your favorable consideration on this amendment.
Discussion? Ready for the question? Question's been called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 60, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, yesterday in Committee of the Hall, there was a request for a Medicaid 101 primer. We passed out the eligibility document yesterday. The department has produced a further document, Introduction to Wyoming Medicaid, that's just been passed out. You should all have it. I've taken just a quick look at it, Mr. President, but from just a quick look, I think it's one of the better short summary documents I've seen in this program. And I would urge the Senate, this is a major portion of our budget, $1 billion-plus program. It's worth you taking 5 or 10 minutes to read this particular document, because I think it is a very good primer on the subject, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, I'd like to compliment and thank the good chairman for his efforts in bringing this forward, along with the department. And I would simply say I think this is a foundation that many of us need that will lead us into then more complicated and very expensive issues. And I find it to be quite helpful. And again, I thank them.
Further discussion? Senate File 60. Having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 70, second reading of the Senate File. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chair, with respect to Senate File, Senate, I think you may just have to read it, but I'd ask it to be laid back one more day.
Senate File 70?
Yes.
Without objection, Senate File 70 will be laid back for one day. Senate File 92, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 92, Trespass Civil Penalty.
Senate File 92, having been read 2 separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 97, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 97, Eligibility for Medicaid.
Senate File 97, having been read 2 separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business. Consideration of bills on third reading. Do you have a consent list?
Thank you, Mr. President, and we do. And I have a consent list. Ladies and gentlemen, the list I'm going to read is the complete green sheet list, but we've taken off 83 Medicaid fraud recovery. So with that, I'd move the following consent list on third reading. Senate File 6, Office of Consumer Advocate Revisions. Senate File 19, Hospital District Elections. Senate File 37, Office of Consumer Advocate Revisions 2. Senate File 39, Uniform Adult Guardianship Jurisdiction Act. Senate File 53, Partitions Actions Subject to Subdivision Laws. Senate File 75, Honor Farm Horse Program. Senate File 76, Bighorn Sheep Relocation. Senate File 87, Proof of Motor Vehicle Insurance. And Senate File 105, School Capital Construction.
Would any senators like any of the bills removed from the consent list? Hearing none. Having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 6, Office of Consumer Advocate Revisions. Senate File 19, Hospital District Elections. Senate File 37, Office of Consumer Advocate Revisions 2. Senate File 39, Uniform Adult Guardianship Jurisdiction Act. Senate File 53, Partition Action Subject to Subdivision Laws. Senate File 75, Honor Farm Horse Program. Senate File 76, Bighorn Sheep Relocation. Senate File 87, Proof of Motor Vehicle Insurance. And Senate File 105, School Capital Construction. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
30 ayes. Senate File 6. Are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Perkins, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no.
Meyer, aye to no. President Ross, aye to no.
Bebout,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 6. 25 ayes, 5 noes. Senate File 19. Are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Perkins, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 19. 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 37. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Perkins, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 37. 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 39. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 39, 30 ayes. Senate File 53, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 53, 30 ayes. Senate File 75, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 75. 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 76. Are there any changes?
Rothfuss,
aye to no. Hastert, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 76. 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 87, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 87, 30 ayes. Senate File 105, are there any changes? Case, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no.
President Ross, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 105. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, Senate Files 6, Senate File 19, Senate File 37, Senate File 39, Senate File 53, Senate File 75, Senate File 76, Senate File 87, and Senate File 105 have passed the Senate. Senate File 83, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 83, Medicaid Fraud Recovery, sponsored by Senator Peterson, and Act relating to Medicaid, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. Would the reading clerk read in? Third reading amendment number one to Senate File 83.
Senate File 83, third reading amendment number one, page 11, lines 10 through 24.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number one to Senate File 83. Ask the body for favorable consideration. Mr. President, I spent some time with the sponsor of the legislation to find a little bit of a compromise to ensure that we had some more flexibility with regard to giving people felony convictions when there wasn't any clear indication they committed a felony, and trying to provide a few more levels of detail and clarity within the legislation. And what we have here is a nice compromise that add some additional wording. You can see in lines 5 through 10 that there's a bit of an expansion to the overall charge or the overall concern. It says it is unlawful for a person to knowingly fail to maintain records in accordance with Medicaid program rules as necessary to disclose fully the nature of the goods, services, items, facilities, or accommodations for which a claim was substituted or payment was received under the Medicaid program. That clarifies a little bit that it's not just bad bookkeeping, that there's a little bit more to it, and indicates any person who violates this subsection is guilty of, and then it has the same misdemeanor provision as the original language does in Romanet 1. Romanet 2 adds the possibility of a high misdemeanor, which is basically the equivalent of what we saw in the previous legislation for 25% or more of the funds of the Medicaid claims submitted in the three-month period, and that's up to 1 year or $5,000 of possible fine. Sorry, I left one thing out. I'm going to back up just a little bit on lines 12 through 18 back in Romanet 1. One of the additional changes is there was a previous floor of 10% in the old language where you could neglect 9% and there'd be no possibility of a charge. You could do that all day long, all month long, all year long. It was that magic 10% barrier. Well, to the extent that we're providing a little bit more clarification on the knowingly aspect, we felt that it was reasonable to remove that floor of 10%. So at this point, it would be possible to receive a misdemeanor if at any point you knowingly mess with the records in a way that would potentially defraud. And then you can see in Romanet 3, lines 28 through 30, that now there's further clarification of the felony level, where the felony punishable by imprisonment for not more than 10 years, $10,000 or both. Under circumstances, if the person intended to defraud and the medical assistant claimed for which records were not maintained equals 25% or more, which is similar to previous, but there is that intent now. Or alternatively, in lines 38 through 40, the conviction is the person's second offense within a three-year period under this subsection. Mr. President, you'll recall from the debate that the felony really was intended to be for situations where you had intent to defraud or you had repeat offenses. We've clarified that in statute to make sure that my grandmother, for example, wouldn't be convicted of a felony charge based on accidentally losing the records. This additional clarification, in my view, strengthens significantly the criminal penalties that are provided here, and I appreciate the sponsor of the bill working with me on that to come up with a nice little compromise. I urge the body to support.
Further discussion. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would concur with my colleague. It was a give and take. I gave and my colleague took, and it was... But seriously, Mr. President, I think it better defines the intent of the criminal aspect of this bill that we are trying to... get out of here and go over to the House and fight the battle over there, and I think it improves it for that battle over there on the other side. And so I would certainly concur with my colleague and ask for your favorable consideration on this amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question's been called. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 83, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment has been adopted. Senate File 83, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson? Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 83, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 83 has passed the Senate. Members of the Senate, before we move on to the next order of business, I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce you to our doctor of the day today, Dr. Renee Hinkle, if you would stand. Welcome to the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
What did he say?
Are we at that order of business to go into committee of the whole?
We were until Senator Coe got in the way.
Well, he had some really important information to share, without which we would not have been able to move to today.
Okay.
But now that we've gotten that out of the way, I'd move the Senate adjourn itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Senator Hicks.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for your consideration is Senate File 16. Will the reading clerk read Senate File 16?
Senate File 16, Aeronautics Program, sponsored by the Management Audit Committee, an act relating to aeronautic programs. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Cooper, Esquibel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, where its reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? I would call on Senator Von Flatern to explain the bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with a due pass on Senate File 16. To present this bill, I ask that you call on the great senator from KC.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill is brought to you by the Management Audit Committee. Mr. Chairman, we did an audit of the Aeronautics Division, looking at their programs, and remember, it's a performance audit, how well they're doing their job. It's not a line-by-line audit, but it's how well they're doing their job. And, Mr. Chairman, I would preface the discussion of the bill by paying my compliments to the Aeronautics Commission, sometimes under some very adverse conditions, particularly personnel issues that was very unfortunate and actually very sad. One of their key people got seriously injured. That division stepped right up, and I thought did an admirable job of working with our audit, and I think we got a good audit out of it, but I want to commend them. Mr. Chairman, there's really two things that your Aeronautics Division does. There's two main programs that they oversee. One is enhancement, is a loan program to do structural items in your local airports. That can be anything from hangars to taxiways to runways to lights to all parking, all that stuff that makes an airport work. That's funded up to $10 million out of the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. The other program that they work on is air enhancements. That's the incentive program that, with cooperation of the local community, tries to ensure that we get better enhancements and better reliability and those type of things for the passenger side. Mr. Chairman, I'll walk through the bill. There's a couple things as a result of the audit that we're recommending in this bill. The first one is on page 2. What that does, the Aeronautics Commission, which are the people that know this, they're scattered around the state, they know what's going on in these, that we're asking them on the grants for construction and maintenance that they provide information and recommendations based on existing airport planning priorities. And that's the local planning that your local airport does. The commission looks at that plan and says, does this fit? This is when they're applying for a construction item. Going on down through to the next paragraph, and this is the air service enhancement. This is to increase emplanements. The way they measure that is leakage is what they call it when somebody goes out of state or out of market to catch an airplane, and they don't want that. And, Mr. Chairman, I'll draw your attention to page 3, starting on line 5. What we're asking them to do is to go through, when they do these enhancement programs, there's 6 criteria, and we want them to measure the enhancement program against the 6 statutory criteria. They don't have to satisfy them all, but that's so it's a consistent measurement statewide when we provide this enhancement money. And I'll start on line 5. When they entered one of these agreements, that's the enhancement agreements, consideration should be given. I'll walk right through them, increasing the minimum number of emplanements. The second one is increasing passenger employments at commercial airports. The third, and this is new language on line 11, increasing the number of Wyoming resident passengers originating flights in Wyoming commercial airports rather than airports in other states. That's the leakage I was talking about. We want to prevent that. On line 14, going on, frequency of sustaining flight operations. We want to keep these flights going and increase them if possible. The fifth one is on line 16. You'll see the new language, increasing the consistency of service, and 6, lowering airfares for Wyoming communities. That's the criteria. Let me stress again, None of these programs have to satisfy all six, but they'll be measured against those six statutory requirements. By the way, this formalizes what, in fact, they've been doing all along. They're doing a good job of making these enhancement contracts work. Okay, over on page 4, on lines 12 through 14, we want to maintain the money in the Air Services Enhancement account. It does not revert. Remember, that's general fund money, because those contracts roll over from year to year in the various communities that are around the state. As I recall, I believe there's 5 of them right now. They have been successful, but we want to keep them going. And this provides assurance we can keep them going. Okay, going over onto page 5. Now we'll start into the construction portion of their program, where they work on the airports themselves. First of all, the airport has to generate user fees, because that's how they repay the loan for these. Going down to the bottom, and what we're doing here, just to give you the broad brush, the Aeronautics Commission looks at the projects and makes a recommendation. Then we're moving the administration of the loan over into the state land office. The reason we're doing, two reasons, the state land office already maintains a loan servicing division, and I'll get into the details of that later. They're experienced at it. Also, that consolidates, along with the other loan programs coming out of the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, into a single office. We believe it will add a better picture, a better accountability, if you will, of what the draws are, what are often called legislative designated investments in the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. The board, and that's the state loan board, shall request a review and recommendation of the Aeronautics Commission, I'm on the bottom of page 5, on all applications. We're going to let the professionals rate which loans merit funding, because they're the people that know it and understand it. We go on down. The rest of this is primarily record keeping. Once they make that recommendation, it goes to the state land board. We're the ones that actually approve the loans. So that's the gist of it. Going all the way through, we've got where we have the substitute board for commission. That's the state land board. Section 4 is the appropriation. In looking at the two employees that in the state land office that administer these loans, it turned out they are 100% federally funded. Therefore, we cannot use them to work on what is basically a state-funded program. In other words, we have to contribute some state monies to the salaries of those two specific employees so that we don't break the law. That's basically it in a nutshell. What we did, and this is a carefully calculated figure, you could see why. I mean, you could see, obviously, no, but we didn't just pull $10,000 out of the air. After great debate, a great deal of negotiation, and using the appropriate formulas and discussions, we came up with $10,000. That is to supplement the salary, or to substitute into the salaries of those two federally funded employees. I'll go on, Mr. Chairman, on the next page. We've segregated that money. Once we operate this program for a year, we'll know really how much of the $10,000 we need, depending on the amount of time. If we have to take 5% of each of those employees' time, we'll pay them with general funds according to the amount of time they devote to this. They can only use the $10,000 as that salary supplement to make it legal, and the balance will revert back to the, the balance appropriations will probably want it back. I assume they will. But that's why it's $10,000 that will cover and keep us from having federal-funded employees doing state-funded work, which would be illegal. Mr. Chairman, that's the long and the short of it. I really recommend that you put the throttle on full and put the flaps down and vote aye on this good little bill.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I had two questions that I don't understand completely. But the first one is on page 1, line 5, where loans is struck out, and I understand the loans are not being eliminated, but they're just not to be considered at this one commission functions, and I wonder why the reason for that. And then my second question is on page 3, line 12, where we're talking about increasing the number of Wyoming resident passengers originating flights in Wyoming. Is there a reason why that limited to residents? Wouldn't it be better if it was just passengers, whether there's residents or not? You know, if there was, didn't matter how they got to Wyoming, but if they were flying out of a community, that they would be counted.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and I'll take up the second question first. I certainly would, we want emplanements. Again, the chairman will recall, if we get lots of emplanements, there's a couple of things that we really like. It means the federal government contributes substantially to the operation of that airport if you get above the cutoff line. They just count emplanements in that. If we need a second reading amendment to take out the word resident, that's okay with me. But the number of people emplaning is a very important item for these airports. And the other question, I've forgotten what the reference was on that.
And that was on page 2, line 5, where loans was deleted, and it's on the where the commission meets to consider distributions of grants and loans. And like I said, I understand the loans are not being eliminated, but I wondered why they was being eliminated under that meeting to consider distributions.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, with the new structure, the Aeronautics Commission doesn't actually make the loans. They recommend to the state land board the priorities, but it's the state land board that actually approves the loans. So it's no longer their obligation to make the loan. They just give they look at them all and give a priority list or say, yes, this is a good loan. But the loan itself is actually made by the state land office, state land board.
You've heard the question. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatron's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 16, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 16 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill on our consideration is Senate File 61. Will the reading clerk please read into the record 61?
Senate File 61, Revisers Bill, sponsored by the Management Council, an act relating to revision of inadvertent errors. It was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas Ross, and Rothfuss, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? I will ask for an explanation from Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just cleaning my desk, which desperately needs it. But I would move the bill if that needs to be done.
Senator Nicholas, would you like to explain the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be pleased to To explain the bill, first I'd like to move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to the report, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 61. Folks, this is the revisor's bill, and we do have a standing committee. And no, we don't. That's the wrong bill. The revisor's bill. But with respect to the revisor's bill, folks, over time, we, as staff's moving through, and you can do the same thing when you see mistakes in statutes, we periodically each year go back and make amendments and changes to statutes where there are errors that have been caught or where there may have been codes that have been changed and the new codifications may have elements that were not picked up. So this bill simply goes through, makes corrections to our statutes to conform them to the correct legislative intent. It's all self-explanatory. It's about four pages. You can see it yourself. I urge your support.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's recommendation, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 61, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 61 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 72. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor?
Senator Anderson, you may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the body, you see above us a very distinguished-looking group, and it'll take me a minute to identify all those folks and their memberships, but we have above us members of the Wyoming Association of Sheriffs and Chiefs, and maybe we'll just have those folks in that organization stand just so we can kind of sort you out or identify you. Also, we have members from our State Patrol, Wyoming Highway Patrol. We have then members of our Game and Fish Department. We have members of the Wyoming Peace Officers Association. And if I've missed anyone, I would also ask that they stand. I would say to you, we feel very well protected not only today, but most all days. And with that, before we truly welcome them, they invite us, all of us, to their lunch today over the noon hour in the Hirschler Building. So with that, we would say welcome and thank you for your invitation. Let's welcome them.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 72, and there is a standing committee amendment. We can have that read in.
Senate File 72, Medicaid Benefit Recovery, sponsored by the Labor Committee, and Act relating to Medicaid Benefit Recovery. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? I will ask Senator Scott for an explanation on Senate File 72.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee of the whole rise to do so. The recommendation that Senate File 72 do pass. There was no standing committee amendment. And let me explain the Senate file. Mr. Chairman, this was a result of the Management Council charge to Committee Number 10 on the Medicaid program. This is particular piece of legislation is a committee effort. It was not one of the recommendations from the Health Committee.
Mr. Chairman, what we discovered, we heard anecdotally that what's going on in Medicaid is that we're getting a lot more, we know that we're getting a lot more live births on the Medicaid program. It's ranged over the past 10 years from 41% or so up to 46% of the births in the state are in the Medicaid program. We investigated the poverty level, Mr. Chairman, and we find that in the 18 to 24-year group, the poverty level is in the state is at 18-24 male, 16.9%, female, 29.6%, 25 to 34 years male, 8.0%, female, 18.05%. And I would, just for the interest of the body, say that what happens as you get older is that the two genders tend to be the same, and actually the male poverty level is a little higher than the female one in between 45 and 65. That's just kind of an interesting sidelight. But what we're seeing, Mr. Chairman, is that we're getting a much higher percentage of the births in the Medicaid program than the poverty statistics would justify. And the eligibility does go up to 133% of federal poverty. We don't have, because the census doesn't do things that way, we don't have exact figures there. But we're still having a much higher level than we should, given the poverty statistics, Mr. Chairman, of births on our medical welfare program, the Medicaid program. And so we said, why? And what we're hearing anecdotally is that for a number of couples, the man gets a good job in the oil patch or the mines or something like that. They don't get married, and they lay off this major expense onto the Medicaid program. Frankly, we think we're getting ripped off of it. And this is a bill to try to cure that. And what the bill does is it goes into the statute, in the existing recovery statute, and says that they're entitled to recover costs, you know, first point where there's a court order, administrative order, saying that they've got to pay child, they've got to pay medical assistance for children, where they've got a payment from a third party, read an insurance company. That's existing law. And then we add, or sufficient income or assets to reimburse the department for expenses involved in childbirth. That's new, gives the department clear authority. Then we have provision providing for cooperation with family services, and then we give the health department authority pursuant to rules and regs to request the assistance of the mothers. I have got a fact sheet from the health department that I've passed out as to what this would do. I commend it to your attention. They say the potential recovery is, on an annual basis, $2,096,000 for going after these dads that aren't paying their share on the childbirth that they caused, and that the expense of doing that is $311,000 a year. So it would, Mr. Chairman, if that's anywhere near right, if we do this, we will recover a good deal more than it costs to go after the recovery. Now, we're told that there will be somewhere in the vicinity of 500 to 750 births, where there'll be the paternity established, where they're in Medicaid. That's your hunting list to start with. We think the recovery is only going to be possible in about 300 cases. And it probably won't all come in at once. It'll probably come in over time. The rest of them, the dad's poor enough, so there's no point in going after recovery. The department said, we had thought that, well, we'd just tag on to the Family Services Child Support Enforcement effort. And, Mr. Chairman, when we investigated that, we found an absolutely rigid no. They don't want any part of it. They say they can't do it. They won't do it. The feds won't let them do it. I think the attitude from the Family Services Department is because that's the attitude of their federal masters who provide funding and authority in the child support enforcement effort. So we didn't get anywhere that way. So the health department's going to have to undertake these efforts or lay it off to the attorney general. And, Mr. Chairman, at this point, there's a committee of the whole amendment. I'd like to have it read in.
Will the reading clerk read in the amendment?
Senate File 72, Committee of the Whole Amendment, number 1, page 1, line 6.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred, didn't have an appropriation in it now. It was re-referred to committee number 2 in the hopes that it would get one in there because the agency said we got to have a budget. We don't have the people. They're all very busy doing high-priority recovery things right now. And the Appropriations Committee, I thought, would at least add some positions in for this, but they chose not to. So here's the amendment to do that. It is structured so it's divisible. You could have just the positions or just give them authority to transfer existing positions to Attorney General, who may be the best one to do this, Mr. Chairman. But this amendment does reflect what the department says it'll cost a year. They ought to recover a good deal more than this. It does give them the three positions that they say they need, and I think they made a good case for that. I would urge the Senate to adopt the amendment. I'd be happy to answer any questions on it.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, speaking on and against the amendment, a little of the discussion that we had in our Appropriations Committee, the numbers that we have here did come from A&I, the $100,000 for an attorney and $60,000 for an administrative assistance and $80,000 for paralegal. And indeed, the department suggested how this would operate is that essentially that these folks would be located within the Attorney General's office. I'm currently having staff research numbers that we have for starting positions, but I recall in our discussions earlier this year in appropriations that the salary for a starting attorney was around $60,000. Of course, now the $100,000 includes benefits, but I think they overshot it by about $20,000 on that in that position. Assuming that that's what they've done on all of these, we're about $60,000 over for that. But that makes the assumption that there's not enough attorneys in the Attorney General's office or the flexibility to handle these cases in the first place, which I believe there are enough attorneys in the Attorney General's office to handle this extra workload without having to increase the amount of employees in that particular division. I offered an amendment in committee to just look at the paralegals and the assistants, and frankly, I had no support for that in the committee. So, you know, this indeed may do what the department says, but I think that we need to resist this amendment and vote it down. Get the numbers from our staff, which we feel are a little more comfortable, and come in with a amendment that is divisible by position, to determine about how much we want to put into this new program as far as new general funds. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask that that we defeat this amendment and come back in with something that might be a little bit more workable.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, would ask that you defeat this amendment and to sort of tag on to what my colleague on the Appropriations Committee just talked about is the testimony we heard in the committee. And by the way, members of the Senate, this is going after some things that we have not done before in this particular fashion. And when you look at the way this amendment is drafted, you know, it talks about the Department of Health has authorized three positions, but then we may transfer to the AG up to three full-time employees with the money. I mean, I think we really need to take a careful look at this. Maybe there's a way to help in this regard, but it's certainly not this amendment. So I would ask that you defeat it.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment for a couple reasons. One is that, you know, with respect to what we use our Office of Attorney General for, they, frankly, are not well suited for going out and collecting individual claims. They're all in Cheyenne. They really provide a different purpose. But I guess my an overall concern I have is, and maybe this was explored, but we already have a built-in group of attorneys and a budget and family services for child protection and child collection for collecting child support, back support, and their lawyers are set up. And frankly, this is what they do for a living. What I'm wondering is if it was ruled out or whether it was explored the idea of having the Department of Health essentially delegate this work to those same lawyers and which are already out. There's an established network. They're out doing this type of work. And in most instances, they're collecting money that does go back to the state for reimbursement for amounts that we pay out to families where the husbands or wives that are responsible for support are not making the payments.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Mr. Chairman, in the infinite and unending wisdom of the federal government, they've expressly denied the ability of DFS employees to operate in that manner, because we had the same question of the sponsor and the department in committee because we felt it was a natural match. And indeed, it is a natural match, except for the unnatural action of our federal government.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and that's exactly right. Bill came in without an appropriation because when we put it through in the Labor Committee, that was the way we expected it to be done. It wouldn't need an appropriation. And once the committee had voted for the bill, then the objection came out of the woodwork, and we explored it at some length, and they were just absolutely rigid. You got a war with the federal government if we try to do that one. Mr. Chairman, with regard to a couple of the other points, the Attorney General's office. Mr. Chairman, the reason they're mentioned here is they have a unit that already does Medicaid recovery work. It's focused currently on the estate recovery for the nursing home portion of the program, but they already do this work, and frankly, the Department of Health feels it would be much better done if the Attorney General's office were the ones that did it. Now, would have to negotiate an agreement, and that's why the amendment's worded the way it is that the department may transfer. The department has a program integrity unit that could do the work, but I think they feel that it may well be better done administratively in the AG's office. Let's give them the flexibility and let the bureaucracy fight that one out as to who's the best one to do the work in question. Mr. Chairman, if you want to get this is an important bill. We're trying to establish that when there's a child born, that the male has a responsibility. The ability for the male to deny the responsibility is destructive, Mr. Chairman, of the family unit. And our welfare system over the years, the old pre-welfare reform system, did tremendous damage, disgraceful damage to the American family, with the incentives to bust up families. And what we're seeing here with the current situation in Medicaid is a hangover from those days, Mr. Chairman. And we need to remedy it. If you want to have more than just an occasional case dealt with, you want to have a systematic effort, I think you're going to have to tell the bureaucracy with money and positions, especially positions, that we really want to see a good effort. And, Mr. Chairman, I think the thing to do is pass the amendment, and then if the Appropriations Committee can come together and say there's a cheaper way to do it, they can bring in a second reading amendment to do that. Well, I was hoping we'd get that when we referred the bill to the Appropriations Committee. We didn't get it, but let's pass the amendment, say we're going to be really serious about doing this, and then if there's a cheaper way, we can hear about it in second reading and we can support that.
Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, rising for the amendment. A little bit of history on these types of appropriations. Currently, there are two attorneys in the Attorney General's office to investigate, particularly nursing, as my colleague from Natrona County mentioned, to investigate fraud in nursing homes. Those two lawyers are actually funded out of the Department of Health budget. That's how they're funded. It's not under the AG's budget at all. And what this amendment does is patterns right after that one. And it's the correct way to do it. The money goes through the Department of Health. They send them, the lawyers are actually over in the AG's office. But the money is coming out of the Department of Health. So we got a pattern. It does work. This is a properly constructed amendment. And I agree with my colleague from Natrona County. If you're going to go after these people, let's go after them. Now, there's some money out there that the state should be collecting, and this is the right way to get the money from the Department of Health to the AG's office, and it's worked for many years. I can remember when we first started doing that for those two lawyers. This is a correct amendment, quite frankly. I don't argue about the amount, whether they're worth $100,000, but this is the way it should have been done in committee two.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, with respect to the bill, I agree that you've described it as an important bill, and it seems to be important. In terms of the mechanics of it, what I'd urge you to take a look at is that the network of lawyers that are out there. So you say, look, if DFS themselves can't use their staff and their federal budgets, if you will, to chase down these folks, what's happening in most instances is the DFS is hiring private attorneys who are out in the community. And this is the way these things work. I see these cases, I see them coming across the client intakes on almost a daily basis. Mother is a resident of Laramie. Father is now relocated to Alabama, New York, someplace like that, and won't provide responsibility. And what these folks, these attorneys that know that are in this business and they're out in the community, they know how to get the lawsuits filed, how to get these folks served. And there's a lot, the hardest part of these lawsuits is getting the first lawsuit filed in the right county, getting them served, getting the paternity test moving through, and things like that. If you're an attorney in Cheyenne and you're in the AG's office, it is very difficult to say, okay, I've got somebody up in Park County. I want to go interview the folks, figure out who it is, get the case filed in Park County, and get the pleadings out. It's difficult to next to nothing. I submit to you, you're going to create another position in this county, and you're just not going to get any return. But if you take the funding equivalent and then use the network of private lawyers that are out there and have it's fine to have the AG administer it with an existing employee, but say, look, let's go out to the same lawyer that may have established paternity in the first instance and say, now you go collect these monies. But it sure seems to me that having been in the AG's office downstairs in the building for several years, it is hard and almost very unproductive to be here trying to file lawsuits around the state. You got to appear for hearings. You'll run these people to death, and you won't get the work done. So I understand the intent. The mechanism is not going to get you there. But this network, if we use funds to augment services that are already being provided by the private sector, I think you'll get there.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 72, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The chair is unsure. All those in favor, please rise. Those opposed? The motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 72 has failed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I think we can probably come up with a compromise amendment on second reading. This is an important bill, and I would be happy to answer any questions on the bill.
Senator Von Flatron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think it is. I stand in support of the bill. I just have a couple of questions, and I think there's a court case pending in another state where we use the word father and parent. Do we have a definition of that? I'd hate to see what is happening in the other state and all litigation that's probably going to arise from a donor suddenly being found to be searched by their version of our DFS to be the biological father, and now he's going, wait a minute, why am I being asked to reimburse all these expenses? So my question is there a definition somewhere in statute for father and parent, and do we need to put one in if there is not?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I saw that news article, too, and I have absolutely no idea. There are certain circumstances where you presume a father. The cases on the hunting list that we would use would be ones Family Services is willing to share, the cases where they have established paternity. So you're going to start with a list where there's paternity established. There's no question about it. And I don't think they're looking for sperm at sperm donors. I hope they're not, or we'd have heard about it. But I have no idea on that particular one. That's a new concept we hadn't heard of.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a few questions for the sponsors. The first is just looking at the language on page 2, lines 5 through 16. The concern is based on the fact that in the original language, Romanet 1 and Romanet 2 were linked with an and, which I assume means both conditions have to be applied. Under the new language, the and is struck, and you have an or linking Romanet 2 to Romanet 3, which now creates a 3 situation or. I don't know if that's the intent of the sponsors or if that is just something that we have to find a way to amend. The second question that I have, Mr. Chairman, is with regards to line 14 through 16. It talks about has sufficient income or assets. The question that I'm wondering about is with regard to what time frame. There's obviously no discussion of timing for this endeavor. Can 2 years pass? And then all of a sudden I see that one of the parents has sufficient money that they could come back and pay, so now we're going to go back and seek that? Or is there going to be some link in time to this other parent having to have assets or appropriate income at the time of the delivery or whatever the other case may be? I don't know if there needs to be more clarification there. The third question or concern that I have is on page 3 with regard to a desire for a clarification on the request when a request is made for the assistance of mothers who receive prenatal and childbirth benefits in establishing paternity. The clarification I'm seeking is if they don't want paternity established, if they're receiving funds, are we going to make a forceful request because we want to know as the state, or are we going to respect the privacy interest that they have and just say, if you don't want to know paternity, if you don't want to settle that, then we're okay not looking into it? So I'd appreciate those three clarifications from the sponsors.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, with regard to the first one, the change of the and to an or was intentional and done because it improves our ability to act in this area. Right now, you've got to both have a court administrative order and you've got to have a third-party payment. And our thought was, gee, either one of those ought to be sufficient. So we are amending the existing law that way, and then we're adding the third component, and the sufficient income or expenses was left intentionally vague by the committee because it becomes down to a matter of judgment as where is there enough to make it worthwhile pursuing. Because, you know, if dad is making minimum wage flipping hamburgers or swabbing floors somewhere, it isn't worth it. If dad has got a good job in the mines, you bet it's worth it. And there'll have to be some judgment made as to which cases is it worth the expense of the legal system to go after. With regard to the establishment of paternity, for the vast majority of cases we're going to see, DFS has already done that, and we can use what they've done. And I think they have some fairly robust ways of persuading mother that it's a good idea to establish paternity. Basically, for ones that DFS hasn't covered, we're going to ask politely, and that's going to be about as far as we can go. We hear about they're living together, something like that. Then they've violated the initial determination is on a household basis. They've got a household, even if they aren't married, where they're regularly living together. We'll already go after them for Medicaid fraud, and this is separate from that. But you do have an ability, and this it really is. Our thought was, let's not get into all the arguments about privacy and all that sort of thing. Let's just, on the vast number of cases we know the paternity will proceed, we'll ask politely on the other ones.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the minority floor leader had anticipated a couple of my questions, and I thank him for that. But the other question I had was, especially in the lowering, by removing the word and, we're actually in some ways lowering the standard or the requirements for this. And I was wondering if there was any discussion in the committee about the deleterious effects that may have on the family unit. If it's easier to go after the father on this, might that not have a reverse effect and where the father would make himself even more scarce, whereas otherwise he might end up staying with the mother to raise the child?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, you can make that argument either way. Mr. Chairman, in fact, our experience with the old
AFDC program, where you have exactly the same set of issues, where you get benefits by father not marrying the mother. Our experience is that when you go after the unmarried father, what you've done is you've removed an incentive not to get married, and you do, in fact, get more marriages and regular households. The welfare program essentially used to tell dad, you know, he could be fancy-free and avoid his responsibilities, and the society loosened up and changed. It was just destructive of the American family. So we think, yeah, you'll have some cases where dad will say he better skip and have nothing to do with the family. But we think, on average and general rule, you'll see more families rather than less.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question, having practiced a lot in this area and hundreds of paternity cases, at least in this district here, where there's always an order if paternity has been established for reimbursement of Medicaid for the cost of the birth of the child and so forth. And generally, the court orders that be split between the mother and the father. And I'm wondering whether or not the language on page 2 in section D should include the mother also on line 10. I guess my question, you know, these situations, you generally have two actors and both of them have some responsibility and both should have some skin in the game. And generally the orders I see have the father having to pay his proportionate share, which is fine. But I think mothers should also have some of the skin in the game also.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, that argument would be valid except that this is the Medicaid program, and the Medicaid program has already determined that mother qualifies for the program, doesn't have the assets, is eligible for Medicaid. If she had the assets, she wouldn't be. So we already know that mother's poor and can't pay. Otherwise, she wouldn't be eligible and Medicaid wouldn't have paid for the birth. If she has assets that she didn't reveal and gets Medicaid to pay, then we can, under existing statute, Mr. Chairman, already come after her for Medicaid fraud.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on that question, I mean, you could have sufficient assets to pay for the birth and still be Medicaid eligible. So what happens if the father is Medicaid eligible and now you're walking and taking away his only vehicle to get back and forth to a job?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, that's a good point, and it's why page 2, lines 14 through 16 are worded the way they are. Sufficient income or assets to reimburse the department. Now, that's deliberately left a bit vague, and we're thinking the department would have the sense not to come after the car and put dad out in the street so he couldn't pay the rest of it. But that's why that language is worded the way it is. Now, there's in the case, which will be probably majority of cases in Medicaid, Mr. Chairman, or near a majority. There's no point in going after dad. Dad's just as poor as mom is. There's no point to it. But we are, the way we're getting our high rate of births on Medicaid is we're getting a lot of dads who are not poor. And there's some real opportunities there, and that's what we're after. And that's why that's worded the way it is.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 72, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? That bill has passed. Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 125. Will the reading clerk read that in?
Senate File 125, Public Employees, Requirements Upon Rehiring 2, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to public employees.
You've heard in the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure?
I've got to read the...
Nope.
It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Myers, and Perkins. No, Senator Hastert. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? I would call on Senator Myers for an explanation.
All rise and report it. Do so if I do pass motion on Senate File 125, Public Employees Requirements Upon Rehiring 2. Mr. Chairman, this bill basically, I would say, we just call it the anti-double-dipping bill. I think you've all heard of the problem of employees being rehired within a short time period. The current statute says 30 days. What this bill does is extend that out to 1 year. We thought that there'd be a great deal of controversy on this bill. All the members that had some controversial issues with it a few years ago when we moved it to 30 days at their request really didn't have a problem. And part of the problem that existed why we went down to 30 days originally was that, frankly, it was in the school districts, and we didn't have a pay scale that could attract enough applicants, and we had to rehire a lot of the folks in our schools, and that was really their emphasis to bring it back down to 30 days. So what this bill essentially does is take it back up to a year. It makes sure that that if they're rehired in any capacity, and that's in the definitions at the end of the bill, in any capacity, that the retirement system has to repay the has to be paid by the employer both sides of the equation, both the employees and the employer's share of the contribution rate. That holds the system harmless, makes it actuarially sound. That explains the bill, Mr. Chairman. I can go through it line by line if you would like us to, but I think it's fairly straightforward. You'll notice that if we look at the definitions, though, over on page 5, lines 21 through 24, any capacity includes is not limited to a contract employee or any employee of a third-party contractor under an agreement with a participating employer. So it's pretty much all encompassing there. So, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would stand for any specific questions. If anybody has any issues or wants clarification, but I think that generally explains the bill, the need for it, and the history of the issue.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clarification, and maybe I'm missing a point here, but if we are changing it such that we have the new employer paying both halves of the retirement contribution into the fund, why do we still need any 30-day periods of time or any periods of time if that does hold it harmless? And I might just be missing the point here, but hopefully I can get an answer to that.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the need for the bill really has been pretty much a public outcry that we had people leaving the system, getting their retirement, which was $70,000 or $80,000 a year in retirement, or maybe $50,000 a year, coming back in and doing the exact same thing, the exact same position, and getting paid the same salary that they got when they left. So essentially they were Folks characterize it as double-dipping or scamming the system, however you want to put that forth. But the problem that you have when that occurs is that you don't get the ability of movement up in the system as far as being able to elevate different folks and advance them into that higher paying slot. It's not so much, you know, the problem doesn't exist that much in the lower paying jobs, but in the higher paying jobs as far as that ability to stop advancement and to get someone else in that position and give them that opportunity. And so that was one of the complaints that we have heard in the past, that and basically it was from employees that felt that, you know, geez, I work here, you know, for 15 years, and here's this person that's retired, comes back, and you just don't have that opportunity to move forward. And so that's one of the things that this bill does, is it says you get to set out for a whole year. So it allows that natural progression of talent to move up in the organization.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My district has the greatest amount of state employees in the state in it, and I've never even heard of this problem. You have some documentation on positions, agencies, such as that, so that we can look at it and examine how much of a problem it is.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we do, and the retirement system keeps track. Originally, we thought it was 30 or 40 employees. Now we know it's in the hundreds. And what happens is this. An employee reaches the rule of 85 with his it could be a school teacher, it could be an engineer, it could be anybody. You reach the rule of 85, you're now eligible to begin drawing your retirement. So you quit. And then you essentially retire, but then 30 days later, or a few weeks later, you come back and you're reemployed in the same position, but you continue to take your retirement. You'll recall that, in fact, that we had an elected official who was doing this. He had one of our former employees drawing a state salary downstairs and then the full retirement. With respect to the retirement plan, there's no hit to it, because what ends up happening is if you retire and you begin taking your full retirement, and the very next month you come back and you're employed in some other capacity and you continue to take your retirement, then what happens if you're still required to pay the contributions, the 12 or 13%? So you have a contribution being made on your behalf into the retirement plan, which builds the retirement account, but it doesn't add to your benefits. It's no different than if, suppose, you were a federal employee and you had enjoy a full federal pension and you retire, you're in the military, you retire, and you go to work for another agency and you can begin to build a new retirement while you're collecting your retirement benefits. Well, in this instance, since you're in the same plan, you leave the big plan, you come out, you go back to work, and now you're essentially getting your full retirement and you get your new salary, but you're having to pay, or someone's paying on your behalf, the full contribution into the account, but you're not building your retirement. You fixed your retirement at the day you retired. This bill makes it clear that within that first year, if you do come back, you have to make an election. The election is that you can stop taking retirement, in which case your retirement benefits that are paid will then begin to build your retirement amount. So if your retirement was $40,000, it may be next year will be $41,000, $42,000, or whatever that buildup is. There is a problem, but there's two issues here. One is it's really not a double dip in the sense that you've got to make an election, that is, you've earned your full retirement. You come back to work for a general or for an employer that's still under the same retirement plan, and you can decide whether to continue your retirement that you've already earned, and then any payments that are made on your behalf build into the retirement account, but you don't get any benefit. It just benefits the plan. Or you can say, I'm going to discontinue my retirement and build to the amounts I'm going to receive. But the flip side of it is that if you're if you've got a bunch of college graduates looking for jobs, and folks hit the rule of 85 and they say, well, we're all going to quit tomorrow and come back and enjoy, start taking our retirement and work a full pay, there's no jobs available. Now, in some instances, we have heard up in the area, up in the some of the rural communities where teachers actually retired and they couldn't fill the spots. They went back to the teachers and said, we couldn't find another teacher. We need to have you back. And the teacher said, well, I'll come back, but I'm not going to stop taking my retirement. So, in effect, if they're being paid $60,000 and they got a $40,000 retirement, they're making $100,000, but nobody's losing a job because they couldn't find somebody to fill it. So when you see this as the number two version, there are at least two versions out there. One just said you can't do it. You retire, you have to stop taking your payments, that's it. If you retire, you want to come back to work, you have to stop taking your retirement, and you can build to your retirement, but you can't take your retirement and be in work at the same time. And yet we found instances where, frankly, they needed to employ people. They couldn't find substitute or new employees, and they had to engage this kind of a program. And this was sort of a compromise between two positions. So we make it clear that you make a choice, but in all events, there's always contributions being made by the employee that's working. But in the end, another way to do it is just eliminate the practice that once you retire, then we're going to go out and find younger workers, and that's it. But we don't prohibit federal employees who have retired to come in to work for the state. Or if you're in the law enforcement program and wouldn't be the rule of 85, but you hit your full retirement, we don't deny them the opportunity to come in and begin working for a state job and start building a new retirement under the big plan. So this is sort of a compromise just to make sure the fund is held whole so the retirement plan, there's no hit to it, but it also in somewhat discourages the practice so that we make sure that it's used where it's needed to be used, where you can't find a new employee to take their position.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to speak briefly as one who has watched this retirement pretty carefully, being a retired teacher and having been on appropriations back when this problem was really a problem and was being abused at that time, I would just simply say I think this is a good compromise, and of course the sponsor has already talked about the need in the event that there is no teacher to fill that position to come back. But in many instances, and this was shared with me by one of my local superintendents, you have an instance where someone retires, older obviously, more experienced, they're tired, they need some time off, they retire and they take some time off. They're somewhat rejuvenated, and they find out with the experience that they have, these people have the potential to be really good instructional facilitators, and they have a lot of experience and they have a background to bring a lot back into some of the younger teachers, and so they're bringing some of these people back, if they can, part-time, not quite so much responsibility, not quite so much strain, but it's bringing them back, then utilizing that experience to help perhaps a less experienced staff. So there's two kind of issues. Number one, there may not be a teacher there. Number two, they need to bring some of that institutional memory back into the institution, and they can do it in such a way that it's not too punishing for them to do that. So, again, I would urge your support. I think it's a good compromise from what all I've observed over time.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 125, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 125 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Mr. President.
we have anything. Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. President, privilege of the floor.
You may.
Mr. President, the doctor of the day, Dr. Hinkle, has a presentation to make on a prescription that she has filled for one of our senators. Dr. Hinkle.
Senator Geis, when I arrived in my office,
You've heard the motion? Huh? Oh, Mr. Majority Floor. Sorry, lost track here.
Mr. President, I'd move that we stand adjourned until 2 p.m.
Stand in recess?
Let's recess ourselves. It sounded pretty good, though, didn't it? See a lot of excitement coming up. Everybody run home. No, we'll do the recess.
Mr. Announcements, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Appropriations Committee number 2 will meet today in S-13 at 12:30 to discuss Senate File 77, Community College Construction, and it's a re-referral.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment in S-14 to discuss Senate File 140, Out-of-State Workers Vehicle Registration, and Senate File 110, Registration Fees, Trailers with Living Quarters.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your Committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., up in Room S-14, where we will continue discussion on Senate File 114, Assault of Health Care Providers, and Senate File 149, Complementary Hunting Licenses.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30. Note the change of time, 7:30 in Room S-19. We're going to take up Senate File 25, Recreation Facilities and Systems Detraction. Senate File 36, Insurance Publication Requirements. Senate File 99, Water and Sewer Districts Electors. Senate File 134, Voter Identification. Come early to get a seat, Mr. President.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, your Committee number 9, Minerals, will meet in approximately 15 minutes to take up Senate File 136, Seismic Exploration 3. This is a continuation.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your hardest working committee, Committee number 3, Revenue, will be meeting tomorrow, 30 minutes afternoon recess, in Room S-16 up here to discuss Senate File 151, Tax-Free Enterprise Zones.
Members of the Senate received notice from LSO today that we have gotten to the point of bill cutoff, 163 Senate files and one Senate resolution. You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.